Welcome to the deep dive. Right now, top-tier reviewers can't even agree on what the best AI video generator actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely fractured landscape.
Right. But while they argue over the crown, the actual cost to generate, you know, a minute of hyper-realistic video has just plummeted, like, so drastically that shooting with a real camera is about to become a niche luxury choice.
Oh, absolutely. It is a complete restructuring of how media is produced, shared, and, well, valued. If you are building any kind of content pipeline right now, the ground is literally shifting under your feet today.
Which is exactly why you're here with us. We're looking at a stack of updates from the April 9, 2026 edition of the AR Daily newsletter.
And it is an incredibly packed edition, too.
Super packed. And the mission for this deep dive is to cut through that relentless noise of the AI space. Because, let's be real, you don't need to read every single patch note or version update.
No, nobody has time for that, honestly.
Exactly. You just need the strategic insights on where digital creation, social media, and physical making are actually heading. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because 2026 is definitively the year we move from AI as an experimental novelty to the absolute default.
And nowhere is that shift more aggressive than in video. I mean, if we look at the 2026 trend report released by Heijin, their central thesis is pretty jarring.
Jarring is definitely the word.
They are arguing that because the cost per minute for generating AI video has dropped off a cliff, AI video is going to dominate social media as the default medium before this year ends.
Wait, the absolute default?
Yes. Not just a tool for, like, special effects or a fun gimmick, but the baseline way a brand or creator produces moving images.
I was playing the skeptic for a second, though. Are we really going to see AI video as the absolute default, or is this just, you know, Heijin trying to hype up the market? I mean, they are fundamentally in the business of selling AI video generation.
Right. They definitely have a vested interest there.
It feels a bit like a razor company telling you that, you know, for health reasons, you absolutely must shave every single day.
That is a very fair point. It is always wise to look at a source's financial incentives. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the underlying economic metric they're pointing to is undeniable.
The dropping cost.
Exactly. Historically, in any media landscape, whenever the economic barrier to entry vanishes, the volume of content just explodes.
Oh, for sure.
You no longer have to worry about the budget to rent a studio or light a set or hire a camera crew. The bottleneck shifts entirely away from capital and directly onto your strategic ability to direct these models.
Right. So if you're a brand ignoring a massive drop in production costs just because you suspect it's marketing hype, that's a fast way to get outpaced by competitors who are scaling their output.
Exactly. The cost dropping is the real story here.
But let's say someone listening hears this and decides, fine, I need to invest in video skills right now. They immediately hit a wall.
Which tool to use?
Yes. Which tool do you actually use? Because the sources we have today are fiercely contradicting each other.
It is a highly contested battlefield. The review landscape is totally fractured.
Like Curious Refuge, for instance. They just put out a massive, comprehensive 2026 ranking, and they named Clang 3.0 as the absolute best AI video generator of the year.
Right. And they cite its raw photorealism and its physics simulation.
Yeah. And then they say Lumaray 3.14, Seedance 1.5 Pro, and Veo 3.1 are the serious contenders rounding out the top tier.
Which sounds incredibly definitive, until you look at the other major independent benchmark published this year.
Oh, you mean Manas.in?
Yes. They did a highly rigorous independent benchmark test, and they crowned a completely different winner.
Anhui Gen 4.5.
Exactly. They ranked Gen 4.5 as the best overall. And their reasoning wasn't about raw realism, actually. They praised it for its balance of creative control.
Like the camera movement.
Yes. Specifically things like precise camera trajectory and motion brush controls, alongside the output quality. So you have two highly respected voices pointing in totally different directions.
So what do you do with that?
What's fascinating here is that the conflict itself is the actual takeaway for you. The fact that top-tier reviewers cannot agree on a single winner tells us that video generation is still in a chaotic Wild West phase.
Because the tools are just built differently.
Right. They are optimizing for fundamentally different mechanisms. Kling 3.0 might have a better underlying physics engine for realistic lighting and fluid dynamics, which makes it great for cinematic B-roll.
But Runway Gen 4.5 gives you the director's chair.
Precisely. It has built a superior user interface for directors who need to say, pan the camera left while tracking this specific subject.
So the advice isn't to just buy one subscription and ignore the rest.
No, not at all. Keep both of these benchmarks handy as a reference, because when a client or, you know, your boss inevitably asks what tools are currently top tier, the most informed answer isn't a single name.
It depends.
Exactly. It's explaining that the landscape is specialized and you have to match the specific model to the specific creative requirement of the shot.
That reframes the whole problem. Don't look for the perfect tool, look at the whole toolkit. Now, if video is trapped in this wild turf war, I'm actually struck by how completely different the image generation space feels right now.
Oh, the dust is actually really starting to settle there. Video is churning, but still, images have reached a plateau of stability.
You see it so clearly in PC Mag's March 2026 AI Image Generator rankings. The biggest takeaway from their latest update wasn't some mind-bending new feature.
No, it was the lack of change.
Exactly. It was the fact that their recommended lineup remained exactly the same as the previous months. Adobe Firefly, Midjourney, and Copilot. In the AI tech world, seeing a top-tier list remain unchanged for months is almost suspicious.
I mean, we are so accustomed to a new model dropping on a random Tuesday and making everything else look obsolete. Seeing stable leadership is a massive shift.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It mirrors the early days of smartphones perfectly.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Think back to that era, right? For years, every single new phone completely disrupted the market. BlackBerry dominated with keyboards, then Nokia released a crazy new camera, then Motorola's flip phone changed the form factor entirely.
It was constant chaos.
But eventually, the core technology matured, and we settled into a very predictable Apple versus Android dynamic. We are seeing that exact same consolidation right now in AI images. Less monthly churn, more stable, predictable leadership.
And that stability is vital for professional creators. It means you can actually invest hundreds of hours into mastering a tool's specific prompting syntax without that looming anxiety that the platform will be totally irrelevant next week.
So if you are a learner or a creator listening to this, how do you choose your lane now that the tools are established?
Well, AppyPi just released a 2026 guide that finally draws a hard line in the sand to help you choose.
Okay, what's their verdict?
They say use Midjourney for visual storytelling and design communities, but use Stable Diffusion when you need deep local control and customization.
That is the ultimate compass for anyone trying to navigate this space.
It really is. Midjourney is essentially a highly curated walled garden. It runs on their cloud servers. It has an incredibly sophisticated aesthetic right out of the box, but you are playing by their rules and limits.
And Stable Diffusion is the open ocean.
Exactly. You can download the actual model weights, run it on your own hardware, and manipulate the core algorithms.
But, I mean, the open ocean is dangerous if you don't know how to sail. When most people hear run it locally on your own hardware, they instantly picture a black screen with scrolling green text.
Oh, yeah. It usually involves installing Python environments, dealing with command line interfaces, and troubleshooting missing dependencies for hours.
It's a nightmare. So how does an everyday user actually get that local control without a computer science degree?
The friction used to be a massive deterrent, but the April 9th newsletter highlights the definitive solution for Mac users, which is Diffusion B.
I've heard of this.
It's amazing. It packages all of those complex Python environments and model weights into a simple download. You just drag it to your applications folder.
No terminal.
No terminal, no coding. It leverages the unified memory of Apple Silicon to run Stable Diffusion locally, giving anyone with a modern Mac the power of local AI without the setup headache.
That is the perfect recommendation for a student or a client who just wants the tech to work. But let's be real, once you get a taste of local control with Diffusion B, you eventually want to push the boundaries.
You always want more control.
Right. You want to wire together multi-step processes where the image is generated, refined, upscaled, and color-corrected automatically.
And that brings us to the advanced tier of local control Comfy UI.
I want to spend a minute here because Comfy UI looks deeply intimidating. It is a visual node-based system.
It looks like a circuit board.
Yes. Instead of typing a prompt into a clean little search bar, you are looking at a canvas of technical boxes, and you use virtual wires to connect the outputs of one box to the inputs of another.
To use a mechanical analogy, instead of just ordering a drink from a bartender, Comfy UI lets you build the actual plumbing.
I love that analogy.
You can literally watch the data flow through a pipe, get filtered for lighting in one node, run through another pipe that uses a specific model to fix human hands, and then output into a final high-resolution reservoir.
Right. But building that plumbing from scratch, honestly, unless you know exactly what you are doing, you're just connecting random pipes and flooding your basement.
Pretty much, yeah.
Why spend hours trying to figure out the perfect node structure when the Reddit r/StableDiffusion community is handing you Michelin star plumbing layouts for free?
That is the beauty of the open source community. The Reddit consensus right now revolves around Civitai's All Simple Workflow Collection.
Okay, what makes that one so special?
It is a pre-built masterpiece that you just drag and drop into Comfy UI. It seamlessly handles the Flux model, LoRAs, GGUF formats, and upscaling all in one place.
Wait, pause for a second. Let's act like I'm not elbow deep in Reddit forums every night.
Okay, fair enough.
What actually is a LoRa? Or a GGUF.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a listener just trying to build an image, what are these things actually doing inside the plumbing?
Great question. Let's start with the base model, which in this case is called Flux. The base model is the massive brain that understands what a dog or a sunset looks like generally.
Right, the core intelligence.
But what if you want it to draw a very specific character or mimic the exact painting style of a 19th century artist? Training the whole brain from scratch would cost millions.
Oh, wow.
Instead, we use a LoRa, which stands for Low Rank Adaptation. Think of a LoRa like a custom tinted camera lens that you snap onto the front of the main lens.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, it applies a highly specific, lightweight fine-tuning to the image without altering the massive base brain.
Okay, so LoRa is the custom lens. What about GGUF?
GGUF is basically a compression format.
Huh.
These AI models are incredibly heavy data-wise. They require massive amounts of video RAM to run.
Which most people don't have.
Right. So GGUF compresses the model in a way that allows it to run efficiently on standard computer RAM, making it possible to use highly advanced models on consumer-grade laptops instead of, you know, expensive server racks.
So Civitai's workflow pre-configures the base brain, snaps on the custom lenses, and compresses it all so it doesn't crash your computer. It does all the heavy lifting.
Exactly.
And the sources also point out Comfy Workflows, which is this massive community hub hosting thousands of discoverable pipelines for image, video, and audio.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to challenge this whole dynamic. Is this community-driven innovation actually sustainable?
What do you mean?
Well, won't massive corporations like Adobe just look at the most popular Comfy UI workflows, steal the underlying mechanics, and just bake them directly into their software next year?
This raises an important question about where true innovation lives. They absolutely will try, and they constantly do. But it's an issue of velocity. Corporations have to ensure a feature works perfectly for millions of enterprise users before they ship it, which takes months. A teenager on Reddit can invent a new node for fixing AI-generated text and share it with 100,000 people by tomorrow morning.
That's a huge advantage.
Community-curated workflows are consistently beating vendor marketing for real-world usability because the community is iterating in real time. If you want to be well-informed and efficient, building on someone else's proven, open-source workflow is the ultimate shortcut.
It really is. Now, up and until this point, we've talked entirely about generating media, videos and images that live safely behind a pane of glass on a screen.
Right, digital assets.
But what happens when you want to take a generated concept and make it genuinely interactive? Or even physically hold it in your hands?
This is a crucial threshold. We're seeing AI bleed out of traditional media creation and directly into engineering and physical manufacturing.
Well, let's look at the interactive side first. There's a project called CSS Studio that just hit 138 points on Hacker News.
Which is a massive signal of approval from a very critical developer community.
Exactly. And the premise is straight out of sci-fi. You sketch a user interface designed by hand, literally draw boxes and buttons on a piece of paper or a tablet, and an AI agent analyzes the sketch and writes the production-ready code to make it a functional website.
It's wild. To understand why this is a breakthrough, you have to look at how vision models are advancing. The AI isn't just taking a picture, it is performing spatial reasoning.
Spatial reasoning.
Yes. It looks at your hand-drawn box, understands its relational distance to the button next to it, and translates that geometry into structural code.
So what does this all mean? Well, think about CSS Flexbox. For years, visual illustrators who wanted to design websites hit a brick wall called CSS Flexbox.
Oh, Flexbox is a nightmare.
It's the code used to align and distribute space between items on a web page, and it is notoriously frustrating and counterintuitive to learn. With CSS Studio, that barrier to entry just collapses.
You draw the layout, and the agent handles the syntax.
The translation layer between a visual idea and a functional product just evaporated.
And that exact same collapse of barriers is happening in physical making, too.
Oh, Unfolder.
Yes. The sources highlight another Hacker News project called Unfolder for Mac, which scored 110 points.
Unfolder blew my mind. It takes a digital 3D model and unfolds it into flat, printable 2D papercraft templates.
It's so cool.
You literally print it out, cut along the lines, fold the tabs, and physically assemble the 3D object on your desk.
It sounds like a niche hobbyist tool, but honestly, the math required to do this elegantly is staggering.
I can't even imagine.
The software has to analyze a complex 3D mesh, identify the optimal seams that won't compromise structural integrity, and project that geometry onto a flat 2D plane while calculating the physical thickness and bend radius of real-world paper.
Exactly. We spend so much time worrying that AI is going to trap us in virtual worlds, just generating endless digital sludge.
Yeah.
But tools like Unfolder prove that AI is also empowering the maker crowd.
Bringing things into the real world.
You can use an AI generator to dream up a bizarre 3D geometric sculpture, run it through Unfolder, and build it out of cardstock an hour later. It reconnects digital imagination directly to physical reality.
It does. But, you know, as we seamlessly generate hyper-realistic videos, turn sketches into interactive code, and manifest 3D objects from thin air, we inevitably crash into the most critical vulnerability of this entire ecosystem.
Trust. How does the internet actually detect what is real and what is generated?
Right. The tech industry's primary defense mechanism has been watermarking, specifically embedding invisible digital signatures into AI-generated content so platforms can automatically flag it.
And Google's flagship system for this is called Synthide.
Yes.
But our sources highlight a massive development. An independent researcher on GitHub just reverse-engineered Gemini's Synthide. They completely cracked open Google's detection pipeline.
Which is a huge deal.
And what's wild is how the system actually works. Synthide doesn't just hide a metadata tag in the file because, you know, metadata can be deleted in a second.
Yeah, right. That's too easy to bypass.
It fundamentally alters the pixels of the image at a specific frequency that the human eye cannot see, but a machine detector can read.
It weaves the watermark into the very fabric of the image itself, which makes it incredibly resilient to things like cropping, color filters, or compressing the image into a JPEG.
But the GitHub researcher figured out that by introducing highly specific mathematical visual noise back into the image, you can scramble that embedded frequency and completely blind the Synthide detector.
It's brilliant, but also concerning.
So I have to ask, if an independent developer can build a tool to scramble Google's best watermark in an afternoon, is watermarking fundamentally flawed? Are we just locked in an endless game of whack-a-mole where a tech giant builds a lock and the open source community picks it a week later?
It is absolutely a game of cat and mouse, and the mouse is currently very fast.
Clearly.
But whether the Synthide system is fundamentally flawed or simply in an early evolutionary stage, the strategic takeaway for you is this. Understanding how these detection pipelines operate at the pixel level is no longer optional.
It's mandatory knowledge.
Exactly. If you publish AI art professionally, or your brand relies on AI generation, you must understand the mechanisms platforms use to flag or suppress content. If you just trust the tools blindly, you might find your entire content pipeline penalized by a platform's algorithm.
That makes total sense.
Monitoring these GitHub breakthroughs gives you an X-ray view into the rules of the road, even as those rules are actively being rewritten.
That is a crucial perspective. You have to understand the machine, not just use it. Well, okay, let's pull all of this together. We have covered incredible ground today.
We really have.
We started with the sheer chaos of the video generation war, where costs are plummeting and reviewers are fiercely split between Kling 3.0's physics and Runway Gen 4.5's camera controls. Then we looked at the stabilizing image space, where tools like Midjourney and Stable Diffusion have carved out very clear territories.
We also unpacked the mechanics of local control. We saw how tools like DiffusionBee remove the friction, while the Comfy UI community builds complex plumbing with LoRaWAS and GGUF formats.
Proving that real usability innovation is coming from the community, not just the corporations.
Absolutely.
And finally, we watched AI jump off the screen entirely. We saw vision models turning hand-drawn sketches into functional CSS code and unfolding 3D digital meshes into tangible paper crafts, all while the industry wrestles with invisible frequencies and the fragile reality of watermarks.
Looking at this entire spectrum of capability, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Oh, let's hear it.
If an AI agent can now effortlessly translate a messy, hand-drawn sketch into perfect production code, and if it can turn a digital concept into a printable physical craft, what happens to the inherent value of human execution? Historically, we paid people well because the sheer labor of executing an idea was difficult. But if the labor of making the thing becomes essentially free and instantaneous, does the raw original idea become the only currency left that matters in the creative world?
That is a profound shift.
Or, as digital perfection becomes cheap and ubiquitous, will we eventually crave the slow, laborious, delightfully imperfect process of human craft even more because of its absolute rarity?
That's a deeply fascinating question. When perfection is the default, maybe the human flaw becomes the premium feature. Something to think about as you navigate this rapidly changing landscape. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep learning, and pick one of the tools we broke down today and go build something. Till next time.